Around the world, people are working to bring a greater sense of balance to the planet. Earth Wisdom Circles is here to showcase these people and projects. Now, here's your host for Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elaine Grohman on Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio. And today I have a returning guest. I'm absolutely delighted to be able to, first of all, know and then have the opportunity to have deep and wonderful conversations with somebody whose heart is open in ways that is very touching. So my guest today is the returning guest, Stephen Shaya. So welcome back to the show, Steve.
Elaine, thank you for having me. And I knew you said I might be back. I didn't realize so quickly, but it's always an honor.
Well, you never know. So, Steve, I wanted to ask you to come back because of your generous and kind invitation. I was invited to be a witness to a three-day event that just concluded this past Saturday from May 6th through the 9th. And it was an international conference called Unite to Prevent, Unite to Cure. And it was the fifth Vatican conference about healthcare. And you, I know, were so involved from the inception and for years in regard to this. So can you tell us what this conference was about, why it came to be, and now that this is the fifth conference, how have things evolved?
Well, first of all, thanks again, Elaine, for having me on again. The fifth International Vatican Conference was really the brainchild of Dr. Robin Smith, who's an amazing person, a very dear friend, very inspirational, a global thought leader, a physician, philanthropist, author. And many years ago, she was looking for ways to encourage collaborations across many different disciplines. Mm-hmm. You have physicians, you have scientists, you have ethicists, you have philanthropists, you have investors, and everyone was kind of looking at the world in their own way. Mm-hmm. And she came up with the idea to have this event at the Vatican. And I think it's amazing, especially she's a Jewish woman who thought about doing it at the Vatican. So I thought that was especially, you know, very interesting. And I'll tell you, I went to the third International Vatican Conference with my family. We had the opportunity and privilege to meet Pope Francis, which was amazing, but also you had many of the global thought leaders. At that time, Vice President Biden was there, Sean Parker from Facebook, and the list goes on and on and on. And what I really appreciated is that it was a convening where people felt like everyone was equal. You know, we're all, you know, divine beings on this human journey. And it was a bunch of humans trying to elevate humanity. And I just thought that was so inspiring. So I got to know Robin and I went to the fourth International Vatican Conference and had a chance to participate on a panel. And then my involvement has grown. And now my wife and I and my family are exploring, you know, advancing collaborations. But it's an incredible platform to do good. It's an incredible platform to build bridges. It's an incredible platform to meet policymakers, decision makers, change makers, and people who you can work with to make the world a better place. So it's probably the best convening that I've ever attended. And I've attended quite a few in my 50-year journey here on this earth. And I'm hoping to continue to be able to participate the conferences every couple of years. And in the three that I've went to, it just continues to get bigger and better. And the fact that Robin and the Cura Foundation and the Pontifical Culture for Science and Faith were able to do this year's event virtually and flawlessly, in my opinion, is just an incredible testament to their efforts.
Yes. And you know, the name of this particular conference was Exploring Mind, Body, and Soul. And you know, the thing that I love about you, Steve, is that I can talk to you about things that maybe we don't agree on, and we can each come to ways of looking at things and each broadening our own perspectives. Because, and I think that this is so important, because as you had mentioned, this global convening certainly had to be a Herculean effort in order to get all the logistics, all the technology, and all the voices together. And I think that what has always so impressed me about you, when I first met you in that restaurant in West Bloomfield, or Commerce, or whatever the heck it was that you're open to expand. And, you know, this is such a pivotal time for all of us to look at, what are we actually healing from? It's not only how do you heal, meaning most people think of that as, you know, a medical perspective, but there's so much things that we have to look at that have trained and entrained the way we think about one another, the way we think about ourselves, the way we think about the world, that fundamentally has to change. And as you said, you know, people from all denominations, all walks of life, all levels of their expertise in dedicating their life to this, we really need to look at it differently. So I want to thank you for that openness and the invitation to watch all of this conversation.
Thank you for that, Elaine. And I think the one thing that we've learned from the pandemic is that we are all connected.
Yes.
If we're good in the United States and we're not good in India or Brazil or Italy, it will affect us ultimately. And I think there's a big lesson in that, not just in regards to the pandemic, but also the journey of humanity, that we all have to think about each other and we have to find a common ground. We have to find ways to solve problems together. Certainly no one has all the answers. I don't care politically, right, science and medicine and faith. There's no one group that has it all. And I think that when we step back one day and we really look at this pandemic and try to understand what it has taught us, it's that we are all connected as human beings. And we all have to look at humanity globally and not just our own particular interest. And sometimes there may be things that, you know, we don't understand or we don't agree with, but, you know, we have to look at the global good.
That's right. And, you know, what's so significant is as you, as a leader in business, are saying, you know, we have to really put our money towards things that are going to make a huge global change, not just in our own organizations or our own gender or our own ethnicity or our own belief systems. We have to change things globally. So tell me, what do you see as a philanthropist? What does it mean to you to be a philanthropist and how you are helping to help others see the tool that money can be and not the weapon that money can be?
So as I discussed in my talk at the Vatican, there's a big difference between charity and philanthropy. Charity is much more emotional. It's much more short term. It's much more about rescue and relief. Philanthropy is much more long term. It's much more strategic. And it's much more transformational. And money, capital, can be a force for good. And I think there's a lot of opportunities out there to be kind of this transformational force, this catalytic capital. So one example I shared in the panel was the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. They, through a donor-advised funds, invested $150 million into drug development. Now, that drug development, it's a long-term thing. It's very risky. A lot of traditional investors would be squeamish on making that size investment for something that's so risky. ultimately, after 10 years, they were able to come up with a drug to help treat cystic fibrosis. And the company, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, sold for $3.3 billion. So now that $150 million became $3.3 billion, and there was more resources to do good. The efforts around advocacy, around education, all got supercharged with that. And so one of the things that I passionately believe is with philanthropy, it's a lot more than just writing a check. It's really giving part of your heart, your soul, your spirit. It's very intentional. It's very purposeful. And, you know, can you take something and make it exponentially more for the future? And to me, that's where philanthropy's got to go. It's not just writing a check and, you know, once the monies are gone, then, you know, you have to go back and you know, as I always say, give me a fish today, I eat today, teach me how to fish and I eat for a lifetime. So how can your philanthropic endeavors, you know, your philanthropic efforts last much longer? How can they grow exponentially? How can we put positive energy in the world and really try to inspire and elevate humanity? And more, I feel the conversations I'm having revolve around that opportunity with philanthropy.
Yes. And thank you for that, Stephen, because I think that what we need to look at and what the pandemic has brought squarely to our focus, at least in my point of view, is that the problems that we see in the world did not come of their own volition. The problems that we see in the world are created by human beings. And, you know, we are the ones that have to look squarely at what we have done. Poverty is here because of how distributions of wealth and things have been created. That, you know, there is the haves and the have-nots. But when we see that no one is immune to an illness, no one is immune to the need for clean air, clean water, clean resources, communication. And I think that this is a huge springboard for us to look at what's real. What's real?
Yeah, I agree. I think, again, there's a lot of different ways or iterations for giving. I think ultimately the giving that's most sustainable is focused around education and awareness. I think a lot of people don't really understand or are aware or informed about certain aspects of the human condition. Let me give you a real life example. Everyone's so excited today about the vaccinations for the pandemic. I just read that only 10% of our world today on the globe of folks are vaccinated. 10%. So even though we look at, you know, the United States and a much higher percentage is vaccinated, you go to a lot of places around the world and there's a lot of disparities. There's inequities. But I see those, I don't look at them in a judgmental way. I think that's very, very important. I think for me, I look at them as opportunities. This is an opportunity to give back. This is an opportunity to make a difference. And some people, yes, it's money. Other people, it's time. It's passion. It's love. It's caring. You know, I want to make it clear that I don't see philanthropy solely based on how much dollars you give. If you're so blessed to have money and resources to give back, awesome. But everyone can do something. Everyone can do something. And I think that's where we need to sit back and say, you know, as human beings on this divine journey and also all being on this together, in this together, you know, what can each one of us do to give back, to help? And everyone can do something.
Yes. And I can only imagine that the level of conversation between philanthropists must have changed as we're in this process. Because, you know, what does a legacy mean? You know, do you leave a legacy of leaving a building to somebody, or do you leave a legacy of clean water for generations to come? You know, it's a different immediacy of what we need to look at. So, you know, I think that, you know, my having the opportunity to peer a little bit into this world is really important. But you're right. We all can do something. We all can do something. And, you know, as a physician yourself, Steve, I know that, you know, you so graciously share, you know, your own personal story that, you know, your family came here from Iraq because of personal persecution, religious persecution, your parents being dedicated to family and education and medicine, and you having gone through medical school, but then taking over the helm, if you will, of your family businesses and how you've been a leader in that. How is that, you know, sometimes we see our life going in one direction and then suddenly there's a diversion. How has that diversion broadened your perspective?
Well, first of all, to your point, there's a lot of legends in the cemetery. There are very few legacies. And my father passed away in November of last year. And that was a gut punch. I mean, I don't care who you are. When a loved one is no longer with us on this earth, it is difficult. And losing my dad was just, you know, something, nothing prepares you for that. Nothing prepares you. Now, fortunately, he didn't suffer. He went quickly. So I'm very grateful for that part of it. But I really believe that my life evolved, you know, and I've stated this a little bit prior, but, you know, my grandmother was a midwife in Iraq, and she did deliveries, you know, for thousands and thousands of babies in a very remote, rural, undeveloped area. Many times, doing things and getting no financial remuneration. So that's something that I always remember, that she lived such a life of service, and there was so much joy in her giving and helping. And even though she didn't have much monetarily, she was rich in spirit, and there was a very rich family. She had a total of 11 children, with when number 11 was in utero, her husband passed away, and she was the age of 37. And my father had that very similar joy of giving. And as we went on this journey, it was very clear that the reason why we were put on our earth, on this earth, our purpose was to find as many ways to care for people. Our particular vocation or calling was through healthcare. But there's a lot of other ways that you can care for people, but it was through healthcare. My father recognized that, and we didn't miss many opportunities to take advantage of giving back. Now, there were certain things that were very near and dear. My father loved using telemedicine because he thought that was a way to bridge a gap with people. And so that was one way. There are certainly many other ways that we took advantage of it. We had one program where we were providing telemedicine in urban areas in Watson, Los Angeles, where 40% of the population didn't go see a primary care physician, 17% didn't go see any healthcare professional, but they would go to their church, their synagogue, their mosque, their community center. And so we found ways to provide access to care there. And I think at the end of the day, it's all about caring. It's all about caring. And when people feel that someone cares about them, it can really build bridges, religion, you know, to, you know, different groups, you know, and there's a lot of differences in this world today, especially, but, you know, but it can bridge the gap with the religious, cultural, socioeconomic differences in this world. And I can only tell you that a lot of these things I've seen firsthand, the results were miraculous, just with a little caring, just with a little giving, just with a little love. The results were spectacular. And, you know, people really felt that someone cared. And that can change someone's life, and it can change the world.
Exactly. And, you know, thank you for sharing that. And I love the fact, and when you and others, I've had other individuals really acknowledge the women in their life, their grandmothers, their mothers, who historically, under, you know, patriarchal rule, have been disavowed. Their voices have been silenced. Their lives have been silenced. You know, the need for the need for nurturance is a fundamental human need. And I think that, you know, when we have an opportunity to really look at what is the systemic problem of all of the world's ills, is if love is denied an individual from, you know, love is not an emotion. Love is a power. Love is this power that holds the cosmos in place. It is not something that we banty about. Well, I'll love you when, or I'll love you if. It is a force. It is a power. And when we understand that and we really begin to nurture that maternal and paternal love that we all so desperately need, you know, the love that you speak of so genuinely for your father in his leadership role, when everyone is afforded that beginning, all the challenges we see in the world would be gone. And how do we nurture that? How do we nurture that? Tell me your thoughts about that when you're, you know, you are such a broad thinker, Steve. That's what I just admire about you. Your humility, your willingness to think about something, and your honesty about how things have affected you and your own precious family, you know, your little ones, your wife, your siblings, your family of origin. How do we help others understand this is what it's all about? This life is what it's all about.
Well, first of all, I believe that, again, we're all divine beings. So everyone started in a good place. I know we all have our different faiths and we kind of, you know, have our different belief systems, but ultimately we're all children of God. And I believe that one thing we have to do when we're dealing with people is really try to understand that everyone has something they're dealing with. Everyone. And, you know, during this pandemic, really have seen the absolute best in people and the absolute worst. Yes. And you don't know what they're dealing with, you know? And I think it's very, very important not to be judgmental. Exactly. Because, you know, we have good days, we have bad days. I think that we have to look at people that we're all in this together and that we're all going to have our struggles. We all have our cross to bear. We all have something that we have to overcome. And many of us have many things to overcome. And that, you know, some days it's a lot easier to kind of manage that. Other days it's not. So I think if you come in from that perspective, it's a lot healthier. It's a lot more productive. And, you know, I could tell you myself, I don't always deal with people or situations, you know, in ways that I would like to. You know, some days you wish you had, to use the golf analogy, a mulligan so you could redo it, but it doesn't work like that, unfortunately. So I've learned, especially in this last 14 months, a lot of patience with people. Some people have done better adjusting to this new world, this virtual world. You know, I could tell you, my wife, Samantha, when the kids were home last year, you know, for school, that was fairly stressful. And, you know, there were some days that was a little easier to manage than other days. So I really think that we have to have more compassion, more understanding. Those are big elements of love, and that and not be as judgmental. I feel like, you know, especially because the political discourse has gotten so supercharged that I feel like people become very, very judgmental. And we never want to be in that position where you don't want to hear what someone has to say, what someone believes, what someone feels. You know, we always, I think that's what makes our country great. You know, I'm not going to agree with you on everything. But to your point, you know, if I understand where you're coming from, there may be certain things that I can expand my thinking, you know, and when this world that's moving a lot faster now with technology and information, when these world with these more complicated problems and challenges, you know, we have a much broader perspective to solve them. And again, we all have to work together. And, you know, whether it's the environment, whether it's, science, whether it's, faith, whether it's regulatory, nobody has all the answers. That's why the fifth International Vatican Conference is so exciting for me, because it's a place where you can, in a very productive and inspiring environment, talk about some of these challenges and opportunities. But it really, at the end of the day, it's really important that, you know, that people, you know, do this on a day in and day out basis. You know, I find that in this environment, that's a very convenient environment now. You don't have to talk. You can email, you can use Facebook, you can, you know, there's so many ways of communicating that sometimes it's easy to kind of not address, you know, certain things, not engage, you know, in certain ways. And I think it's really important never, ever, ever to lose sight as humans of the humanity of our humanity. And I think that's very important.
Right. And I thank you for that, because you're I agree with you 100%, because we are so entrained, unfortunately, to judge, even when we don't realize we are. We have sometimes prejudices that we have because of things we've witnessed. But I think that what this opportunity, this COVID pandemic, has done is give us a chance to really acknowledge what is working and what isn't working. And not, it doesn't have to be judgmental. It should be honest. You know, is this work? And if it doesn't, you don't have to beat somebody up forever that what they believed in the past wasn't working. But maybe you can gently see together, well, what might be workable? You know, as you were speaking, I hearken back to, like, you know, I'm from a family of nine, so I understand, you know, when we learned to be collaborative. We learned that everyone had their role. A five-year-old could not do what the 15-year-old was doing, but you could learn from what the 15-year-old was doing so that when you got to that age, you would understand. And our mothers, our grandmothers learned to work collaboratively, literally to take a village. And with the support, hopefully we get more and more to the support of men and women working together, because we are one human species that should never be against one another, but we have such important roles together as a united species. Only life births. You know, and thank goodness we have men like yourself. No, I'm serious, because, you know, that is willing to let your heart be seen. That's huge.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I will say this, that if you do studies globally, you make the greatest impact on mothers, supporting mothers, because there's a force multiplier effect in all these countries. So I always think the mothers are women and mothers are so important. But yeah, everyone has their role in society. Everyone has a role in family. Everyone has a role in a relationship. I think the most important thing to me is authenticity. If anyone thinks life is easy and everything is perfect for anyone, they're not being real with themselves. Right. You know, to me, the people that I gravitate towards are people that get in the proverbial batter's box and take a chance. People that get in proverbial batter's box and try to do something. And look, you know, when you talk to most successful people, they failed and failed and failed and failed, but those failures set them up for success. So that, to me, authenticity, self-awareness, you know, learning from your lessons, learning from your journey, that to me is what sets people apart from the good and the great. And that's what I think, you know, I'm trying to teach my children. You know, of course, you want to make, you know, a wise person learns from their mistakes. A wiser person learns from other mistakes, other people's mistakes. But we're all human. We got to make our own mistakes. But, you know, I think, you know, we're all one of the things with social media. One of the downsides of social media is it's so easy to be critical of everything and everyone. It's so easy, yeah. You know, and, you know, instead of saying, you know, hey, what did we learn from this situation? What did we learn? How do we do better next time? And, you know, that's one of the challenges with social media. It's so easy for everyone, people don't get in the proverbial batter's box and don't try new things. And I think a big part of learning is trial and error. And that's been my life. I've failed more than I've succeeded, but those failures really were instrumental in all of my major successes and will continue to be. I still make mistakes. I'm still going to try to invest in people and opportunities and, you know, with investments and with, you know, whether your time, your energy, your love come risks, but also what's the downside? You know, you sit and you never try anything, you never learn, you never grow. So I think that, you know, being in events, tying into the, you know, one of the premises of this discussion is the 5th International Vatican Conference is an opportunity to meet, you know, people that have done amazing things. And, you know, it's a way to be inspired to kind of stretch yourself. How can I do more in science and medicine, philanthropically? You know, what can we do to kind of, you know, elevate humanity? And I think that's what makes it unique. And certainly, you know, I think there needs to be more of those type of convenings and environments because there's great opportunities to do a lot of good in the world.
Right. And I think, you know, as we've seen across the world, when the pandemic hit and people were, you know, they were sent home, we have this beautiful living example of workability in its nature. The earth herself knew how to clean the atmosphere. You know, where there are certain areas in the world that were so, when everyone was out and busy, was so fogged and dirty that you couldn't see anything. And so, you know, the science is the study of what's already in existence. It's the study of life. It's not the wrangling of life. It's the study of life. And so, you know, last night, being that yesterday was Mother's Day, I was just taking a walk out in my garden, and I came upon this tiny, tiny, tiny thing that just caught my eye, and I got literally down on my hands and knees and saw on a bit of moss this translucent, perfect wing of an insect. And it just brought my focus so clearly to there is this big power that we're a part of, that we could completely ignore this beautiful perfection, that we don't know the part that is playing in all of the world. We don't know the part that each human has the potential to bring to the world, the beauty. But when we work together, the challenges that we've seen in the world may actually correct themselves, because they're all human driven, because we've been taught to be afraid of one another or to judge one another. And I think that we have to let those shackles go, you know? And I think that this beautiful understanding that we are spirit, in order to live a life, we require a body. We're not smart enough to make a single cell, but we can study that cell and understand this vast cosmos that we're just a part of. We're not just here as a visitor. We are it. It is us. So I think that, you know, this conversation is going to open in a whole new way. What do you think about that?
So one of the things that I've been trying to work on personally is being present, living in the moment, because I think when you do, you're more in tune with with, you know, God, with energy, with light, with nature. And I think that's one of the challenges in this world today, is that with technology, with cell phones, with emails, with all the different, you know, electronic mediums to connect, that, you know, we get so distracted that it's hard to live in the moment. I mean, and something, it's one of my personal challenges to try to do that. And look, you know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, you're on a Zoom call and emails are coming in and texts are coming in and WhatsApps are coming in. And I think that the more you can live in the moment and be present and be connected to the person you're talking to, be connected to, you know, nature, be connected to God, be connected to all the energy around us. And I really believe that we're getting messages all the time, you know, from a variety of different, you know, just to, you know, bring up my spiritual hat a little bit. We're getting messages all the time. And, you know, the question is, how much of it are you really processing? You're taking in. And there's something much, much bigger out there than ourselves. And I think that we need to be aware of that. Some people are much more attuned to that than other people. But for me personally, it's living in the moment, being present in the moment. It's just very difficult because my personality, I'm a multitasker, I'm a high energy person. You know, I've got the 10 problems that I've got to solve today, you know, on my mind and my heart and my spirit. And so, you know, yes, I think there, you know, the more that we can live in the moment and be present, the more that, you know, I think we're all more connected. I think we see the beauty in nature and, you know, all these things that are really divinely put together. I think we see all of those, and it really kind of puts you in a, you know, in a different place as far as what's possible and, you know, what your purpose is. Because when you find your purpose, I don't care how much money you make, I don't care how much success you have, when you find your purpose, why you were put on this earth, that's when you're going to find fulfillment. That's when you're going to find satisfaction. That's when you're going to see, you know, the connections with other people. And I think it's very, very important.
You know, I had the opportunity a number of years ago to be with a Quechuan elder. So the Quechuans are the indigenous people to Peru. And this beautiful, wise elder in his 80s said to me, just, you know, there was a glow about him, a very humble environment in which they lived. But he said, you know, every human is here for exactly the same reason. We are here to acknowledge that we are spirit. And we're here to acknowledge that we have this powerful substance, this powerful thing called love. And we're here to take action with it. And so, you know, that's what I appreciate about you, Steve, is that you are in the moment. You may have 10 things going in the moment, but if you can, you acknowledge this has some significance in the moment. Because so many of us in our lives, you've seen it, I've seen it, physicians have seen it, psychiatrists have seen it, global people have seen it. We're either living in the past of what's happened to us, which we can never change, or living in our future hope of what we want, but we forget this is the time to make it happen. We're only in the now. This is this holy, whole moment. Holy not being aloof or off or distant, it's whole. We have all we need right now. We have this life. And what do we do with that? That's the significant part. So please, my friend, don't beat yourself up about you're doing a million things at once. You're doing them. That's the amazing part.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I think we all, you know, we all can, there's always room for improvement for all of us. So, you know, again, we talk about being judgment, respectful of other people and situations. A lot of people tend to be very judgmental of themselves as well. You know,
right.
Why did this happen to me? You know, why did I do this? You know, what could I have done differently? And they become, and I think that's the other thing for people that really their heart is in the right place. You're always going to want to do more. You're always going to want to care more. You're always going to want to love more. And I think it's something that, you know, you've got to manage as well. As like, it's not so much, it's all personal, right? It's all relative. You know, where was I at, you know, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? Where am I today? And where am I going tomorrow and next month and next year? And so everyone's journey is different. I think once you understand that, truly understand it and really feel it for both yourself and for others, I think it puts you in a different mindset. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with having high standards. I think that's a good thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with pushing the envelope. I mean, look, you know, could you just play it safe and, you know, and never try anything, never do anything and just, yeah, but then how much are you going to grow? You grow in the difficult times and, you know, and so I've learned the most in these challenging times. Now, could I make things a little less challenging and stressful? Probably if I do some things a little bit differently, but at the end of the day, you know, I think you got to be who you are. That's what it comes down to. You would talk about nature and God and spiritual and energy. You know, the only way to really tap into it is find your purpose, find out who you are. And once you do, it's like day and night.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was so touching to me, you know, being able to witness the 3-day Vatican conference and the breadth and the depth of human collaboration. You know, I remember watching, I wish I could remember off the top of my head, the individuals that were doing stuff with CRISPR. I can't remember their name, but I have my family, one of our precious brothers died of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. So it brought me to tears, you know, that, because we are studying this incredible universe of the human genome, it's a cosmos within itself. And how do we help it to let these challenges be eliminated or lessened? And it's really about collaboration with life, not trying to wrangle life, you know? And, you know, I get the opportunity, I'm so grateful to have a platform like this to be able to speak to so many different people, from people that have been in the military, people that are in law enforcement, people that are in medicine, people that are in business. And when we look at the hardships we're trying to mitigate so that people, as you say, can find their purpose, can find their a joyful person is more able and willing to be contributory than someone who feels like they've been abandoned or not having the necessary things that we all need. So I think that this global conversation is so huge, but so necessary. And it had to happen and probably only happened because we had a pandemic. That you really got to listen to everyone's voice because you were watching a screen or a very prescribed time. Thank goodness, I'm sure that there was so much more that everyone could have said. But there was that conversation, the door was open. And we just got to keep opening the door more.
Well, it was a miracle that they were able to put that event together. I mean, you can imagine the schedules of these, you know, global thought leaders, change makers, policy makers. I mean, to the people, Robin Smith and her team that could coordinate and curate all of that and put everyone together. I mean, to me, it's exponentially more difficult to do something like that than have everyone at you know, an event in person, you know, because now you're dealing with everyone's, you know, crazy schedules. But, you know, and look, there's, it's incredible, the content, the wisdom, the knowledge that was conveyed is incredible. Of course, though, you know, that human element, I can't wait till the event is in person again. And by the way, there's worse places to go than Italy, for the record. There's worse places to go than the Vatican. And I can't wait to go have some gelato and some amazing Italian food and be around the wonderful Italianos. But you know, the part with these convenings also are the when you do them in person, there's opportunities for follow-up. There's opportunities to you know, see people in person during breaks, you know, at the events are very intimate. And so that's and the virtual was great. It was very efficient, you know. But I do look forward to it being in person because, you know, some of those, my goodness, some of the things, you know, Judy Faulkner was talking about telemedicine and she's the founder of Epic and some of the statistics you know, things that she was quoting was so interesting how, what a paradigm shift in healthcare now that yes. More and more, you know, the visits are virtual. And you know, things like that that are just real life, so it was amazing. It's so exciting, and I can't wait to, you know, things normalize, you know, so we can do more of those type of things in person. Now, that being said, with COVID and the pandemic, and there are going to be a COVID 20 and COVID 21, I mean, the likelihood of having a normal sized event probably is going to be, you know, that's going to affect how many people can actually come also. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it all plays out. But we definitely in this time, there's a new normal for the time being. And I don't think we're just going to bounce back to pre-COVID. I think we're going to be in this for quite a while. So to the extent that we need to adjust and revise and reboot, I think the people that are adept to that will do well. And a lot of people, it's going to be more challenging.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, of course, we all want to be together, physically together. But I think this gave a unique opportunity for the voices to really be heard. And that's so significant. And speaking of voice being heard, I want to acknowledge that incredible, I'm going to put my glasses on so I can read this properly. You, Stephen, were one of seven individuals that were acknowledged as receiving the 2021 Pontifical Hero for Inspiration Award, which was so beautiful. And this was given to you for promoting social change through your commitment to and work to improve human health and preserve the environment. So I want to thank you for that. And to be acknowledged from potentially millions of people.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's always nice to receive a recognition, you know, so I'm grateful for that. But I really have to thank my father and my grandmother who are in heaven. They were really the inspiration, you know, for myself to go out and try to do more and achieve more and love more and be more. And so that really goes to them. I mean, my goodness, I mean, like the CEO of Moderna was one of the seven. I'm like, oh my God, talk about someone doing, you know, making vaccines for COVID. And I mean, you know, it's really humbling that list, you know, to be on there. And again, it's just a reminder that life's a journey, not a destination. There's more to do. For those that are given much, much is expected. And that's the way I look at it. And I'm going to keep pushing the envelope, keep getting in the proverbial batter's box, you know, succeeding, failing, growing, learning, and you know, trying it again. And I think that's what makes life beautiful. And, you know, I'm grateful that my father and my grandmother gave me enough confidence to you know, go out there and, like I said, get in the proverbial batter's box and give it my best shot.
Right. So, Stephen, when the sixth Vatican Conference comes around. So presumably it's every 2 years, is that correct?
In normal times, yes.
Okay. What do you see as the horizon for the sixth conference? How do you think now this global conversation can expand more?
So I think that the emphasis on global health will continue. The only way to reach your human potential is to reach your health potential.
That's
And I
right.
think the emphasis is going to continue to be around global health. My wife and I, my family are actually playing a, I'll say, a catalytic role. And there's some, big things that are going to be announced in that to help advance and promote that. I look, the Catholic Church, like every other institution, has a lot of challenges. Okay.
Yes.
But nobody houses, clothes, feeds, educates, or provides more healthcare globally than the Catholic Church. It's just a fact. So, how can we take some of the things that they've done and build on it? And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities around with technology, with innovation, with people from all different walks of life, from science, from medicine, from different faiths. And one of the things that was great in the conference is there was a lot of representation, for example, from other faiths, the
Yes.
Muslim culture, the Jewish faith, the Mormon culture. I thought it was super fascinating hearing about how the missionaries for the LDS Church are providing healthcare, globally. So I think they're just going to continue to be this coalescence around, mission-driven, purposeful people from all different walks of life. Every single event I've been to three now has kind of taken the taken it up a notch. So the blessing and the curse for Robin Smith is to how do you keeps raising the bar, but somehow, some way, she always finds it. So
Well, she's not doing it alone, obviously. She's doing it
yes.
with the assistance of yourself. And obviously, she has an openness of mind to have a greater conversation. And I think we do have to honestly look at all of the systems globally, from monarchies, kingdoms of all kinds, religions of all kinds that have done great harm. And we have to look at historically how we make sure that that is acknowledged so that it doesn't continue. And I think that that is the amazing part of Pope Francis's mission, is that he took his name from from Saint Francis of Assisi, who understood that we are a part of this ecosystem. He talked to animals. It wasn't a mythology. He understood that there's other living presences on this planet that deserve respect, that have to be cared for, because then we're caring for ourselves as we broaden the embrace of life. And I think that that is so important for us all to recognize. We have to change everything. We have to be honest about what has happened. We can't undo it, but we can say, let's take down the walls. Let's change these barriers we've put in place artificially, so that the peace we really want in our lives, that we really have never seen, how do we make it reality?
Well, you mentioned Pope Francis and Saint Francis of Assisi. So one of my favorite quotes is, "For it is in giving that we receive." And I think this Pope embodies that, his message of hope and mercy and giving of love, came at a very critical time for the church. I'm Catholic, so putting my Catholic hat, it was a very, very critical time. For him to be there, I believe it was a providential and divine that he's there at this time. And I think he's really, pontifex means, pons means bridge. And he's built a lot of bridges to places that needed bridges that they weren't there yet for the church. He was just in Iraq and doing a service in the Chaldean Rite. I'm Iraqi Christian and Chaldean, so that was super exciting. And but I think that, I mean, he was meeting with imams and he met with the Ayatollah and he was trying to build bridges to places and people that have not been there. And the world needs more of that. The
Yes.
world needs more of that. And I think that's one thing that we can take from his example is that we need to reach out. We need to try to understand. We need to try to learn. We need to try to care. We need to try to love. And I think the more that we can, do that, the better we'll all be.
And I think also that, you know, he's held people accountable, which is very, very important. Because, and if I'm not mistaken, when he was elected to the Pope, he didn't come out with a grandiose speech. He said, pray for me. Because he knew the undertaking and the history that was on his shoulders and the doors that he was trying to open in really being loving and humble and inclusive in ways that maybe have not been done on the globe in our history.
Elaine, name one institution that hasn't had crazy issues. I mean, through history, when you have human beings involved, right, you can look back historically and everyone's had to reboot, and I think, you know, that's the lesson in all of this. There's no institution,
exactly,
that's above it. When anything, any government, any institution that's run by human beings, you're going to have issues, you know, that human beings have. And I think that's what we got to understand. And he really brought, you know, like you said, you know, it wasn't trying to sweep anything under the rug. He brought a really kind of, you know, discerning look and, you know, trying to move things forward. And look, there's still a lot of issues. But when I look at the world today, I don't think we can just depend on our institutions. If we think like a government or institution is the answer, we're going to get disappointed. I think what you need is these kind of public-private partnerships where you bring the best of different, you know, different aspects of society, come together and build a platform that can solve some of the world's most daunting problems. I think that's the lesson in all of this. And I have faith in God. Institutions or anything run by human beings, you got to look at it like, you know, with not a rose-colored glasses for sure. But that's where the opportunities are as well.
Yes, and we thank you, Stephen, because you have, and again, my guest has been Dr. Stephen Shaya, who I'm proud to call a friend. And, you know, we're in this moment in life, in the history of this planet, in the evolution of our human consciousness, to help us all be better people so that we can really all appreciate this life that we have been given. And in the moment, in every moment, as it ticks by through this, as we move through this great cosmos that is so beyond our comprehension, but is held in place by something far beyond us all. And we need to learn how to collaborate with it and appreciate it, because life is the greatest journey we'll ever have. And being on a journey with people like you that are making change a joyful thing. I think that change to some is fearful because maybe they don't want to account for what has happened, but we have to lovingly do so, so that we can forgive and move forward. So Steve, I want to thank you for all you do. I want to thank you for your leadership, your big heart, your big personality, but you're like a big teddy bear. I love that. You are, honey, it's true.
You gotta
admit it.
Thank you.
Thank you for all that you do in this, taking the time of your very busy schedule to help people understand what's happening in the world so that we can make it all a better place for everyone and everything. You're a treasure, my friend.
Thank you for the kind words, and thank you for the opportunity, and many blessings to everyone listening to this.
Thank you. So this is Elaine Grohman on Earth Wisdom Circles. We need to have wisdom to make this life workable for everyone and everything. And we all have the potential and the opportunity in any moment to empower. And that's what Empower Radio is all about. Leading with your heart, leading with love, and being inclusive to all. Thank you.